Welcome, folks, to The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher. Every week, diving deep into the truth of Catholic social teaching and restoring all things in Christ.
The Uncommon Good is on the air. I'm Bo Bonner.
And I'm Dr. Bud Maher.
We are coming to you from these United States of America, here in the middle of the country, Des Moines, Iowa, at the convergence of two rivers. We talked about that last time. But more importantly, right, we are here in the middle, talking with all of you. We're in the midst of things, Bud. That could be our show title. Yeah, you want a t-shirt of that? In the midst of things.
Des Moines has to be fairly close to the center of America.
I mean, at least spiritually, right?
It is a crossroads. I-80 and I-35.
We are the crossroads. Do you want to name the show, rename the show right now, The Crossroads?
No, I think mega church down the street.
Oh, that's right. Oh, never mind. Please don't sue us. Yeah. So we don't work at the crossroads, either a place named such or on a corner of a street. We work at Mercy College of Health Sciences, where I am the senior advisor for mission initiatives and the director for the Center for Human Flourishing. Bud, what do you do out at Mercy College?
I'm the associate provost working on the academic side of things.
And this is The Uncommon Good. We are so glad that you are with us here on this Wednesday. Wonderful to have you. Wonderful world. Wonderful, wonderful time to be alive. Bud, I don't know why I'm acting so positive today, but maybe people out there need to hear it.
I was thinking of retiring from radio because, you know, I feel weary some days. But then I saw that Albert Pujols is going to be in the home run derby. And so I figure if Pujols can knock home runs at age 40-something,
then we can just keep knocking home runs.
Carry on.
Yeah, like that's I like this idea. Is if you can imagine Iowa Catholic Radio, it's multiple shows in a home run derby. I don't know if we're winning, but we are lapping John Leonetti. That's the big important part to point out, right?
That's sort of the standard that I operate with.
Well, speaking of people who lap the competition, I don't know. She's using the baseball metaphors. Yeah. We want to say thank you to Mercy College of Health Sciences for underwriting our show, mchs.edu. I know many people think of summer, and they think of summer breaks and vacation, and certainly we have students that are out doing that, but we also have people who are in the middle of work here in the summer, because one of the things that Mercy College provides is a fast track to get into that the way of life, that work, working with people, but of course that healing ministry of Jesus Christ that we have imbibed from the Sisters of Mercy. And so you can start at multiple starting points. They have different links, different programs, but I am thinking that even here in the summer we have people tooling away, working hard so that they soon will be Mercy graduates and then go out to help the people in the communities wherever they end up.
Yeah, I think that is one thing that makes Mercy College of Health Sciences distinct. Our faculty, like you said, working during the summer to help students move along pretty quickly. So a real boon, I think, to what we offer there at the college.
So, again, thank you, Mercy College, mchs.edu, for underwriting the show. Not writing the show, but that's us. And speaking of writing the show, we're, of course, keeping up our what we've been doing all of 2022, talking about sacrificial leadership, kenosis, self-emptying leadership in imitation of Jesus Christ. And here in this sort of second part that we've been dwelling on for a bit, we've been talking about the saints as the mirrors, the emblems, the sort of living instantiations of what that should look like. So, of course, we're going to start with some of the ones that are most important to us, some of our favorites. You know, after we got through, of course, Jesus and the apostles and some of these very early people, we're moving on to people that play a significant role in our lives. We've talked about Sister Catherine McCauley last week, but Bud, we're talking about one that is very important for both of us. I think obviously for you, as you're a scholar of St. John Henry Newman, but I always tell people I'm a resident alien in Newman studies. I keep end up talking about him, although so that I think he wanted me to do it more than I ever planned to. But we're going to talk about John Henry Newman and how he is a sterling example of what we mean by sacrificial leadership.
Yeah, and actually kicking off this show, you know, Catherine McCauley died in 1841, and Newman entered the Catholic Church in 1845. As you know, Bo, he later served as rector at the University of Ireland in Dublin, and now that I'm talking about that, I sort of wonder if Newman crossed paths with the Sisters of Mercy. have to dig through his journals and see if I can find anything about that.
That's right. You've heard it here, folks. As we're just talking on the mics, Bud Future Research is coming up. Yeah. So, you know, folks, you want to stick around for that. That's sort of just live action, gritting your teeth, edge of your seat. Are Bo and Bud going to come up with future research topics? But, of course, things imminently practical. How do we imitate the saints in order to imitate Jesus Christ in a sacrificial leadership? This is The Uncommon Good. Bo Bonner, Dr. Bud Marr, stick around, and we'll be back right after this. Back with The Uncommon Good, Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Marr joining you this Wednesday. Thank you for listening to the show. It's wonderful to have you with us. So we're going to be continuing on with our sacrificial leadership series of shows. And like I said, part two, we're considering the saints and how they are the sterling examples of living life like Jesus Christ as leaders, pouring themselves out, the kenosis of what it should be for Catholic leaders. So we're going to consider St. John Henry Newman, very important for both of our lives. Bud, I think the torch, though, has to be given to you, Newman, playing a very central role, not only, I would say, in your conversion and your professional life and all that you do. We have people the world over that ask you for advice and insight into Newman. I always make this joke that Newman people love talking about the minutiae of John Henry Newman's biography. I know that we don't have time to do that, but it's important that Newman himself, in the sort of his lived life, in his biography, sort of shines forth exactly what we're getting at. So let's get a little bit of historical context to make sense of John Henry Newman.
Well, I think a great place to start. So Newman's life spanned from 1801 to 1890, a long life. And as I said during the first segment, he converted to the Catholic Church when in 1845. So he was already like in his early 40s when he came into the Catholic Church. So if you think about like quite a bit of spade work as a minister in the Church of England before ever becoming Roman Catholic. And I think for our purposes, Bo, with the servant leadership and sacrificial leadership that we've been talking about, when you think about St. John Henry Newman's life, what really stands out is I call it kind of like an unswerving commitment to follow the truth wherever that might lead. Mm. So when he comes into the Catholic Church, it's important for us to recall how much he left behind. You know, listeners are probably at different points in their own lives, but Newman at this stage had really achieved sort of the pinnacle of what he had always striven for. He was a fellow at the University of Oxford. You know, he enjoyed a life of teaching and quiet contemplative study there. And so like from a success level, from a level of what he most enjoyed and appreciated doing, like Newman had it all before him. But as he began to study the early church, as he began to wrestle with these important theological questions about what kind of church did God found and how did God intend to preserve the truth, he felt himself more and more pulled to the Roman Catholic Church. And in the end, he left behind all of those accolades, his comfortability, like I said, the thing that he enjoyed doing the most. And he left for, the true church, but at the time, one that was really vilified in England. To become Roman Catholic was sort of to become un-English. I don't know any other way to say it. It's sort of like unpatriotic because the dominant culture within that society really prized English life as, in part, a rejection of what they saw as like papal tyranny. And so the Church of England, the established church, with all the benefits that accrued to that, was not in communion with the Bishop of Rome. And to work at a university like Oxford, to serve on the government, all these sort of privileges, you had to be a member of the Church of England and ascribe to all the articles of faith that they had, you know, instantiated.
It's interesting for us to consider what seems, in a certain way, easy to do. It's not martyrdom per se, right? There's ways to consider other saints where people sort of have the sword to their throat and say, If you give up the faith, you get to live. Yeah. And I'm not saying anything silly like, oh, actually, martyrdom's easy. What's really hard is living, four more decades or whatever it was. But I want to really highlight that in some ways you would think that the definitive point, right, that you are under the tyranny of a Roman emperor and they're like, you either recant or you die, brings things into focus in a way, Bud, that I think is not before many of us. But I will say that many of us have before us the possibility where we could imagine, what would it be like to say, for the sake of the faith, I'll give up my livelihood. And not only my livelihood, but decades of where I think my life was supposed to go. And additionally, like you said, a successful livelihood. It's one thing to go, oh, Newman was a young man and he really hadn't made it yet, and so, oh, he's not giving up much. But he climbed the ladder of English university society, I mean, at a record speed in some ways. What he did was sort of, not unknown, but he really was this sort of rising star in a way that most people don't think about with universities because we're just a bunch of dorky nerds. But in that society, it was a big deal. And as you said, not only does he give up sort of Englishness itself, his life following this is actually, in some ways, like a series of failures, to be honest. Like, nothing really ever sticks like it did. To become cardinal at the end of it must have seemed very interesting to be Cardinal Newman, but even within the church, so it's not just like, oh, he went to the Irish University and that didn't pan out, or that nothing was ever quite like Oxford, but even within the church, he was met with significant doubts. People didn't really know what to do with him. He really did jump into the deep end, not assured that anything like what he was doing beforehand would work out. Literally pouring out everything that he had, I don't know, literally figuratively, in order to become this new thing.
It would be nice for youth ministers if with Newman's life, he came into the Catholic Church and then everything was hunky-dory. So it's like, well, he made this great sacrifice, and then it was amazing. But as you say, it really was, after that, kind of a series of difficult circumstances from, you know, him running the University of Ireland and that falling apart. He started to translate the Bible into English. Like, at this time, there wasn't a great English translation for Catholics living there.
Dude, he reams
him. Yeah. Well, so he was tabbed. And he got deep in his project, and then the bishop was like, oh, yeah, we won't need that after all. There's more to the story than that. You mentioned suspicion on the part of leaders. So he's famous for his essay on the development of Christian doctrine. I think some bishops sort of misunderstood what he was arguing in that book. But for a variety of reasons, he was actually delayed to Rome, meaning there was a bishop who wrote Rome and was like, this guy's, you know, trouble or whatnot. Now, you mentioned at the end of his life, he was honored with the cardinal. You know, today he's been raised to the altars. But in all these circumstances, what stands out to me from Newman, especially reading his journals, is he always believed that God was guiding his life, and that even those challenges, those trials, were meant to serve as like fires that would forge him, you know, into becoming a more holy person. So before the show, we were talking about this prayer that he wrote, just a beautiful prayer. God has created me to do him some definite service. He's committed some work to me which he has not committed to another. I have my mission. I may never know it in this life, but I shall be told it in the next. I am a link in a chain, a bond of connection between persons, so that God has a plan for him, that he's, you know, a link in this chain, this larger work that God's about. But as the prayer continues, Newman goes through all these, like, if I'm made sick, that can bring God some glory. If he takes away my friends, I will still praise him. So you can see this sort of like pathos behind his life experience. But he's saying, like, regardless of where God leads me, I believe there's a purpose for it, and that I'm an important, I have this important role to play in this larger plan.
And I think of his probably most famous poem that was made into a hymn, you know, Lead Kindly Light. I don't know if you have that one like memorized or tattooed on your body, but you know, exactly this idea that if we're talking about sacrificial leadership, lead kindly light. So this, we're being brought to somewhere, and Newman felt that deeply in his bones, not in spite of, but exactly because and within the trials that he faced, that the trial of his heart wrestling with truth was stung him more than the sort of potential of giving up Oxford and everything that was going on before. And it's important to point out that then he becomes Catholic, and it's not only that some of these initiatives fail or that people don't know what to do with him, but he wasn't done converting. I mean, but plug your book. What's the title of your book? It's a very important line from Newman.
To be perfect is to have changed often?
Yes.
Yes.
So okay. He lives that. I know you have more. Bud's like, I have more than one book, Bo.
Sorry.
No, kidding. Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
But this idea, of course, that he wasn't done. Yeah. And that, you know, we sort of mentioned this like last time with Catherine McCauley. We've mentioned it with Paul. There's this idea, I think, out there, Bud, that if I just do the one big conversion, right, I'll be done converting. And either life will be perfect or life will be quiet or I'll be good to go, right? And what people want instead of truth is they want certainty. They really want to be certain. They're addicted to certainty. But truth, of course, is not always the same as certainty. And so Newman, in many ways, not only gave up a really sweet gig, he gave up certainty. What the certainty of what he was going to do with his life, the certainty of some of the big questions he was asking. I think becoming Catholic opened up other questions that he fundamentally had. You don't end up writing something like his book, The Grammar of Assent, that is asking these deep questions about how is it that we come to believe, except that he was forged in those fires precisely because he was willing to trust and love truth over certainty, to pour himself out into the truth rather than grasp onto certainty. So we're talking about John Henry Newman. We're going to break now, but you'll want to stick around because we have a bit more to say about him and his example of sacrificial leadership. This is Bo Bonner, Dr. Bud Maher. For the Uncommon Good, stick around, and we'll be back right after this. Common Good, Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher joining you this Wednesday. Thank you for listening to the show. We are talking about sacrificial leadership, part two of the whole arc of the series, The Saints. So we are, of course, starting out with some of our favorites, and it would, of course, make no more sense than to start after Catherine McCauley to talk about John Henry Newman, who we're talking about today. So important, both in Bud and my own life. To finish up here, we just got done talking about how Newman poured himself out into following the truth more than he cared about certainty, certainty in his life, certainty about what he was going to do, certainty even in his intellectual thoughts that end up with great things like the Essay on Development, the Grammar of Assent. Certainty is in many ways, Bud, a temptation that people don't think of as temptation. Yeah. Isn't truth and certainty the same? But if you start to really be subtle and dice this out, you start to see how certainty is precisely maybe one of the worst things to kill faith, because we want to be certain rather, because that makes us comfortable in our belief. I think you have great things to say about this, that Newman understood the great temptation of comfort versus maybe, like you said, big harrowing ones that we usually invent for ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, Newman was no ivory tower intellectual. He spent a lot of time with Christians on the ground as a longtime parish minister and later as a priest or whatever. So he seemed to have a real strong grasp of sort of like the psychology of spirituality. One of my favorite quotes from him that I've recently come back across is he talks about how many of us wish to be saved, but in our own way, to capitulate upon terms and to carry off our goods with us. And so he sort of recognizes this temptation, like, God, I want to be saved, but can I keep this or that thing that I have, or like, can it be on my own terms? But Newman says to be saved, to enter heaven, we have to be new made. We have to be changed. And so, like Bo was intimating a few seconds ago, in his own society, he recognized that for a lot of Christians, what carried them away was actually not like these scintillating temptations that, you know, like Dateline's going to do an episode on or something like that, but really just comfortability. We can be like frogs boiled in a pot of water. And so Newman says, like, life normally brings us difficulties, but if it doesn't, we have to sort of like detach ourselves from some of these goods, not because they're not goods, but because they can distract us or keep us from the ultimate good. And so I think in our own time, like for folks who are listening, I encourage you to just do an internet search and find some of Newman's sermons, because some real challenging pieces about turning all of our lives into altars of sacrifice, avoiding those things that can turn our wills away from God. And just by doing small things well daily, you know, Newman says like one little act of obedience is 1,000 times better than like 10 great professions. Like, I'm going to do this or that with my life. He says, no, just like put one foot in front of the other, like give to the will of another, do that small act of sacrifice as a parent, teacher, wherever God's called you to be. And that's the beginning of the path towards union with God.
And I think for leaders, that is one of the chief temptations. Is we want, it's not even just comfort it's, again, that comfort of certainty to go, oh, well, what I want is to, I don't even want to say, like, make everyone happy or people please, because that's not doing Newman justice to make his point. There's a way in which, as leaders, we want to make people happy in a deep way. Like, even when we're doing this right, bud, we want to make people feel fulfilled. We want to have them enjoy their job or the church they're at or the family, right? We want our kids to be happy that we're their parents. Like, in all these leadership roles, the temptation, like you said, is for the comfort of feeling self-assured to launch out in a self-sacrificial way, to pour ourselves out to pursue truth no matter the cost, is as a leader to be willing to face the discomfort of not being immediately loved, to not being immediately lauded. And that, I think, we can ask Newman by asking him to pray for us to help us do that as leaders in a self-sacrificial way. This is the Uncommon Good. May Jesus Christ, the Prince of Peace, reign in our hearts, family, city, state, nation, world, solar system, galaxy, the whole kit and caboodle. This is the Uncommon Good, and we'll be back next week. But if folks want to join us here at Iowa Catholic Radio in our prayer life, what are ways that they can do so?
Please do join us in prayer. We broadcast the Rosary at 6 a.m. and 10 a.m., the Divine Mercy Chapel at 2:55 in the afternoon. And you can pray the Rosary anytime, anywhere using the Iowa Catholic Radio app.
And it's always good to point out the Iowa Catholic Radio app, where you can listen live, like we said, do the things that Bud was saying in terms of prayer, but also catch up on what's going on at Iowa Catholic Radio in and around the Diocese of Des Moines. You can also go to iowacatholicradio.com and find that all out. Listen live, do all those things. Also donate. Donating at iowacatholicradio.com or 515-223-1150 to make sure this wonderful ministry that's more than just the people here on the air or even the people behind the boards or anything like that. No, it's your ministry as well. Your prayers and your time and your volunteering help us out, but also the material help through donations. So please consider donating. 515-223-1150 and iowacatholicradio.com. Just a few things that are happening in and around the diocese. On July 24th at 6 p.m. at the Iowa Events Center Ballroom, we got Scotty McCreary with special guest Ali Colleen. This is the Iowa Catholic Radio's foundation fundraiser. So if you go do that, it supports Iowa Catholic Radio. So please make sure to do that. On July 28th in Oskaloosa and Oskaloosa Square at noon, we have the Oskaloosa Sweet Corn Serenade. Affiliate KMFH 95.7 FM on the square. So make sure to be down there. The Iowa State Fairgrounds, August 11th through the 21st, that's the Iowa State Fair, and Iowa Catholic Radio will be there right west of the Ann and Bill Riley stage. We got all sorts of other things as well. So, yes, go to iowacatholicradio.com and check all that out. Bud, blessings to you, blessings to your family, and we'll make sure to join everyone next week. This is the Uncommon Good. And we'll talk to you all next week.
The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher is heard every week on wonderful Catholic stations like this one and anytime on podcast. Just search for The Uncommon Good.
Support for Iowa Catholic Radio and The Uncommon Good provided by Mercy College of Health Sciences. Learn more at mchs.edu.